each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea for the Winds Have Changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coyce. Happy to be with you. Today's not Wednesday. Today's Thursday, and I'm here.
Oh, no!
Yeah. There's that whiner again. I don't know why. Whenever I say I'm here, it seems like Nick doesn't like me being here.
No, we're happy to have you here.
Yes, we are, Father.
How come you whine when I announce my name? I don't know. I don't understand.
And it can't be Tony because he's not here yet.
Tony's probably stuck on the expressway.
It's interesting to have you here twice in the same week right now, too.
Well, it is. And I promised my listeners I'd go into the second part of our episode in history. I started recounting a lot of the stories of Mexican history. And I need to say again, I think, you know, at the outset, you know, of course, people here that have Mexican ancestry would be interested in the story of Mexico. What is not so, I think, obvious is why should anyone who's not of Mexican ancestry be interested in the history of Mexico? And I repeat, as I said yesterday, I think and I count myself in that category, although I speak Spanish and spent many years with the Mexican parish and communities. But setting that aside, I'm just a Slovak American. And speaking for those who are not of Mexican ancestry, we should be interested just on the surface matter of just being a neighbor. It's a country that is our neighbor, of course, so we should be kind of interested. But also, secondly, because the Hispanic population, especially Mexicans, are such a growing demographic in the United States today, I truly believe that looking back and trying to understand the relationship, especially the relationship between church and state, that was part of the story of Mexico. It's an interesting part of the story of the United States, and a lot of that isn't known, but it's very much a part of the story of Mexico. And if we don't get it right, if we don't see what was going on, I think that's part of the problem, is that many times those questions, that issue isn't really addressed as it should. And I think that's what's wonderful about our Winds of Change radio program. We could dive into some topics that you might not hear on other programs. But definitely, I, as a Catholic priest, have a certain perspective, a perspective that comes from a life rooted in certain truths, certain basic religious truths. And those things affect other parts of our life, of course. And that may not be so obvious to people, but I think it is, you know. Did you find yesterday, Christine, interesting? You obviously have roots in Mexico. And where's your family from again?
My father's side is from Michoacán.
Michoacán.
And most of them are living in Morelia, which is very colonial. You mentioned yesterday because of the Spanish influence. Beautiful city.
Yeah.
And that's the capital of Michoacán. And my mom's side of the family, they're from Jalisco, La Barca, Jalisco. And I always find it fascinating to hear the history of Mexico. That's where my roots are.
Yeah, yeah. And being in America mm-hmm. and being an American as well,
yes.
There's an important need, no matter where you live, no matter where your ancestors grew up, mm-hmm. there's an important need to apply our faith to the world that we are in now, place where we find ourselves. There was an old song that we used to sing at vacation Bible schools, Bloom Where You're Planted. I don't know if you ever heard of that one. Bloom, 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 bloom where you're planted. And indeed, we need to make the kingdom of God bloom here where we're planted and help as many others as we can, other places too.
Or plant seeds wherever we go.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we're here, wherever we visit.
And when you're visiting. Yeah.
Yes. Be a testimony, a witness.
I often compared my Mexican parishioners where I was here in Chicago at Immaculate Conception Church. I like to remind them in some ways. I wanted them to know that I felt something that I believe is very strong in their world makeup or in their world outlook that is not so much for me or for others, but I often tried to let them know that I knew that they are in some sense people without a country. mm-hmm. In some sense, they're searching for an identity. Or I've noticed when I've gone down to Mexico with my Mexican friends, people down in Mexico look at those Mexicans from the United States a little bit strange. Number one, they're always wondering, what did you bring me? you know,
you have money over there.
yeah, that's, you know, not in every instance, but that happens quite a bit, you know. And people that, when you do go down to Mexico, you do try to bring things,
sure,
you know, that you can't get down there, et cetera. But then being up here, you're especially if even if you are made a citizen, you know, but especially if you're not, you don't feel like you have a country. So
you're like in limbo, you're caught in the middle.
There's a kind of a nationalistic mm-hmm. limbo, yeah, and that's not healthy mm-mm. for a person. That's why I'm saying I encourage those people. A major difference between my Mexican friends who are immigrants and those people who came from Europe comes from the fact that the Atlantic Ocean is wider than the Rio Grande.
Yes, it is.
I don't know. Does anybody as a shock? The Atlantic Ocean being so wide, it's an ocean, and people who came from Europe came over here, and they didn't look back, by and large. People who came from Europe, when they came to the United States, had a much stronger sense that I'm not going back. I'm cut off from my family. I'm going to have to make a whole new start. I'm going to have to make a whole new home here. And in the olden days, before there were telephones and radios and modern means of communication, that was when you kissed your mother goodbye in France, Spain, England, Germany, Poland, Italy, wherever, Slovakia. You may not have seen her again, ever seen her again, you know. But people coming from Mexico to the United States, they don't have that kind of power. They don't have that sense. Am I wrong about that?
No.
Do you know what I'm saying, Christina?
It makes me recall when we were younger, we used to drive to Mexico to visit our family.
There's bridges over there. You can drive across a bridge.
Yeah. So I could see your point. It's a larger body of water.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I want to make a somewhat political point in the sense that when the issue of immigration comes up, mm-hmm. those who are European immigrants always remember their story, and they relate to the fact that this is how our family came and started, and they don't make a distinction. There is a difference between people from Mexico and Honduras and Guatemala and Colombia and Argentina and Peru and all the rest. There is a difference. And so, but that's not saying that there shouldn't be a right for a nation to watch its borders. You know, I'm not saying anything like that, but to not see a distinction between the immigration of people from Europe to the United States versus Latin America to the United States, there are some distinctions. And another distinction that needs to be thrown into the hopper of any kind of discussion or thought on the matter is the fact that so much of the western part of the United States used to be Mexico. You know, you can't just wipe that out, and therefore I think it's wrong to condemn wholeheartedly the United States, and for that matter, Mexico. In that sense, it's hard to make a moral judgment at this juncture in time, although those moral judgments, I think, still do linger in some ways. I never forget the, I was in Guadalajara and visiting a beautiful little town where my secretary comes from, the beautiful little shrine, isn't it? It's not so little, it's a big shrine to one of the Cristeros, one of the martyrs of the...
What town is that, Father?
Atotonilco.
Atotonilco, yes.
Yeah, if you remember that. Little, pretty poor, I have to say. You know, not the poorest, but, you know, they might say middle class, and that, but for us, coming from the United States, it would a lot... Of course, when you see houses without windows, you know, here we in Chicago say, oh, that's dirt poverty. But down in Mexico, if your house doesn't have windows, you know, it's not that tragic because it doesn't ever really get cold.
At least you have a house.
If you have a house, right. So where was I leading to this? You know, the distinction there is. I gave a sermon down there once, and I said, well, I know I was speaking in Spanish, of course. And I said, I'm sure you've discovered that I'm not from Mexico. And, you know, I'm one of those gringos here, and I'm so happy.
They didn't
to
say
be
you
here.
Were from Jalisco, right? Because a lot of, we no. always make fun, we always say that Tony's from Jalisco, because a lot of people from Jalisco are fair skinned.
Is that
they're
right?
Hueros.
Hueros, yes. Mm-hmm. If I may have been able to pull off, yo soy su amigo, padre güero. I'm your friend, father white man. Light skin. Maybe,
light skin, fair skin. Yeah.
Yeah. But then I told him, I guess I should apologize being from the United States because y'all know that we kind of stole Mexico, we kind of stole Texas. And they laughed.
And if you think, Father, the southern states, they have Spanish names.
Yeah. Yeah.
Names are Spanish.
Spaniards from Europe. Mm-hmm. The European Spanish is what mm-hmm. you're mentioning as opposed to the Indian.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Indian indigenous kind of tribes, yes. Tribal names.
That yes.
are different. But I also added, after I told him, you know, I feel I have to apologize a little bit because, you know, we kind of stole the land. And then I mentioned, but you know, you weren't really using it. You know, I was like, okay, here's a, you know, if you see somebody sitting at a big restaurant table and they're eating a big steak and they're leaving their potato.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did you ever do that? You ever been at a restaurant? Are you going to eat that?
You've done that, Father?
Well, all the time, you know. Are you gonna eat those fries?
And you so don't want them to go to waste.
You don't want them to go. Exactly. You don't want them to go to waste. So the United States was kind of looking at Texas and Arizona, California, mm-hmm. and they
Arizona.
Saw. Oh yeah, it was on the Mexican plate, but then the United States kind of thought. Can I have some of your fries? Can I have some of your land? And so there was. But really, there were not very many Mexican settlements up north. Up north was up north, you know, and a lot of Indian tribes were still, of course, well established up there. And as a matter of fact, one of the stories about the takeover of California from Mexico by the United States, it's one of the more, it's a much more, I want to say, peace-loving story than the Mexican-American War, where there was a lot of fighting and bloodshed. America, the United States got California without much of bloodshed at all. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the people that were there, there weren't that many of European ancestry, and there were Indians, Native Indians there. Thanks be to many of the Catholic Jesuit missionaries. Catholic Jesuit missionaries made it out to California, and they were doing a lot better than anybody gives them credit for. They learned the Indian languages. They started teaching them how to farm. They started teaching them how to sew clothes and all the rest, and they were having somewhat of a, you know, success, as it were. And then some of the American settlers of the gun-toting kind, and they were needed out there in the West. They protected the settlements from the Indian attacks much more than the Mexican government did. You know, way far up north, the Mexican government had so many fights and battles of its own down in what is now Mexico that they didn't take care of up north very much. So anyways, that's an important part of the story that we don't hear very much. And as I say, the United States won California without firing much of a shot. As a matter of fact, there's one battle. I can't remember the name of the battle. It might have been the Battle of Los Angeles or something, right around Los Angeles or San Diego or some one of those big towns today. There was the American soldiers were getting ready to pounce on some of the Mexican soldiers who were defending one of the settlements. And the Mexican mayor of the town settles out of court, so to speak, without fighting. And the very next day, they start a three-day fiesta, and they party together.
Nice.
They have a three-day fiesta celebrating the fact that they avoided war. And, you know, their loyalty to DF, mm-hmm. Mexico City, wasn't that strong. And their loyalty to Washington, D.C. wasn't that strong. They were happy just to be out there, and whatever country is going to help them the most and protect them the most, they're able to go along with it. So, and very interestingly enough, and this is where maybe we should get into the story of Mexico again, because part of the story of Mexico, remember I divided the history of Mexico into basically 200-year segments, you know? After the 300-year segment known as colonial Mexico. So after the 300 years of colonial Mexico and the revolution comes, and the first 100 years, which I want to talk about a bit today, because it's in getting to know some of those stories that you can appreciate the second 100 years. And that second 100 years is where the Partido Revolucionario, the Institutional Revolutionary Party comes in. And so that's where we are at now. And as a matter of fact, looks like Nick is saying, we're going to take a short break. We're going to jump back a couple of hundred years or 150 years back to before the official Mexican Civil War. And I want to teach you and let you know of some of the little civil wars that were going on and where some anti-Catholicism really broke in and started to take deep, deep roots. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush, and you're listening to listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
You've heard us say that Winds of Change is listener supported. That means you help us stay on the air with your dollars and your prayers. And we are asking for that help now. Please take a moment and go to our website, windsofchangeshow.com. That's windsofchangeshow.com. On the upper right-hand side of the page, there is a link. Support Winds of Change Show. Click on that link and donate securely with any major credit card. With your help, Winds of Change will continue to bring you the truth. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How would your family's life change if you were living on or below $2,000 a month, amounting to less than $24,000 per year? About 650,000 of your fellow Chicagoans living in poverty are facing that reality. This statistic fuels the Catholic Campaign for Human Development in their efforts to fund organizations working to empower the poor. You can contribute to CCHD on November 22nd and 23rd during our collection. Visit chicagopeaceandjustice.org for more information.
Welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning into Winds of Change. I hope you enjoy some historical notes in order to shed light on our world today around us, because I want to take us way back. Tony made it. It's so good to have Tony here, too. God bless you. Oh, wait a minute. You might need a microphone.
That's good. There you go. It's really interesting to actually listen on the radio, because I do love radio. It sounds so good on the radio outside.
We are radio lovers.
Yes.
As our listeners, right?
Yes. Don't... That sounds very professional,
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yes, we are.
Yep. That's right. I think I prefer listening to the radio than watching TV most of the time anyways. you can get some things done, my listeners. You know, you can do some things around the house while listening to this program, but don't do... any open heart surgery or try to cut a piece of wood at a 47 degree angle. You know, this show is so riveting, you will no doubt make some mistakes. You will have to concentrate. Let's go back into history. As a matter of fact, I brought a little friend along. I love this diving into history because I believe it's so important. And I brought a little friend along. Uh-oh. He's a little dog. Can you introduce him to us?
Here he goes.
Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Well, thank you. What's the guy's name?
Sherman.
Peabody and Sherman.
Yes. We're going to take us back to... where are we going to take us back to? Let's take us back to July 14th, 1824. All right? The summer of 1824. And for those who are listening and have their secret decoder rings or took good notes from yesterday, do you remember the date we kicked around...
Yes.
Last
March 19,
1823. Very good.
Wow.
Very good.
I went blank.
March 19th.
I was paying attention.
Yes, you were.
Not that you weren't, Tony.
No. Oh, I forget dates too.
I don't remember what I just did a few minutes ago.
And you know, the falling in love with history, you need to get over the fear of a bad memory about dates.
Right.
You
know? Yes.
I think the fact that almost all of us have a bad memory about dates makes us feel like we can't appreciate history.
Or you know what, for us women, that saying, we forgive but we don't forget.
That's true.
Well, there you go.
We don't forget.
Women should be great historians. They should. Well, and especially... the part of history that affects me, that affects something that happened to me. I sometimes forget, you know, the dates of things that happened to me. You know, when was I at such and such a parish? I have no idea. You know, it's just one of those crazy things about our mind. But remember yesterday, we talked about 1823. It was the day that Agustín Iturbide's abdicated his throne as Emperor of Mexico. And that was, again, very soon. That was the first that's the first thing that happened after the Declaration of Independence. And I can't impress on our listeners, as you're thinking about this in history, that's got to ring a little strange. What's going on? They fight a bloody war against the army of the Queen of Spain, King and Queen of Spain. Once they, the loyalists of Spain, give up, what happens? They put in an emperor. You know, is there something a little strange, you know, about that? Because I want to say this. I think it has something to do with the good sense of Catholic philosophy and Catholic morality, Catholic worldview, because obviously a lot of Europe was Christian, Catholic. The Holy Roman Empire was crumbling at this time. And it never really was what people think. The Holy Roman Empire wasn't what the modern mind thinks
it was.
That it was. We'll have to save that for another show. But Mexico being free from Spain, they didn't want to give up everything that they thought was good. And they didn't want to give up their faith. And they didn't think it was necessary to give up their political institutions like kings and emperors. You know, they was doing pretty good. So it was really a thought on many that we're gonna create Mexico here, but it's going to be assimilated into the known world. It's going to be part of the known world. That word assimilation is used a great deal today in terms of people coming to the United States to assimilate into our American culture. And there's a theme there that's very important, I think, is worth talking about. But here I'm using the word in a little different sense, that America, that Mexico, as it was trying to birth itself, wanted to be assimilated into the known world, that being the European world. Because at this time, America was so young, so untested, and no one wanted to see America fail more than the monarchs of Europe, especially a guy by the name of Napoleon from France.
Oui, oui.
And a number of other monarchs as well, but they were all kind of saying, general people aren't smart enough to run a country by themselves. It's not so easy. You need smarts. And unfortunately, that's true. I think that's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. But the problem came as monarchs tried to run their country, they lost their smarts. Mm-hmm. You know, they began to think that they're smart just because they're born in a royal family, and that became quite a disaster. So, anyways, that's at the first phase of the Mexican Revolution, of just getting rid of the Spanish loyalists. That was the first thing. But then comes Iturbides, and as I said last week. Or just yesterday, it was just yesterday if you're listening. You know, he didn't really want to be an emperor, but they kind of forced it on him, and he was happy to grab it, or he thought, yeah, okay, let's do it. So the date that I just threw out now from our Wayback Machine for today is July 14th, 1824. Okay, so that's not the summer after he abdicates, but the next summer after he abdicates. So after he abdicates, he goes to Europe. As I say, where's a fallen emperor to go? You know, you want to go hang around where you'll be treated nice or whatever. So, and then remember I said that one of his friends whispers in his ear, or maybe it was more than a whisper in his ear. He says to Agustin, Mexico is in a heap of trouble and they need a leader. And only you can really save Mexico at this time. And he appeals to his sense of ego. Mm-hmm. Others say, Don't go back.
Yeah. Do it.
Don't Sometimes go I wonder, back. Was that really his friend? Or
was that?
Sometimes I wonder, was it really? Was he really his friend? Or?
Oh yeah.
I wonder. You know,
it's all part of a bigger plan.
It's all yeah. That's a good perspective I have, Tony. You know, it does make fit into the bigger plan. Mm-hmm. Well, anyways, July 14th of the next year, 1824, is when he lands. He comes back, and everyone coming from Europe always goes to Veracruz. That's the New York City of Mexico, you know, where people land. And so Veracruz, he comes there, and very interesting thing happens because he's like, okay, I'm going to be here. I'm going to try to help Mexico. And he's greeted by a guy by the name of let me find him, Don Felipe de la Garza. Mm-hmm. Don Felipe de la Garza. Don Felipe comes to Agustin and says, "Welcome to Mexico. How was your voyage? I trust you didn't get too seasick." And he says, "Very good." And Don Felipe was the guy who led an insurrection against Iturbides on the instigation of Santa Anna. Santa Anna, obviously most people know who he was. And so Santa Anna encourages Don Felipe de la Garza to turn him over to the opposition, because Iturbides comes in and thinks, well, you know, this is going to be a little bit hard getting back the throne, but, you know, he remembers the Viva Iturbides, Viva Agustin, Emperor. He remembers he was quite popular not long before that. Mm-hmm. So he figures he can get to Mexico City and try to save Mexico, because there's quite a bit of dastardly things going on. But Don Felipe, the guy that Agustin Iturbides pardoned.
Oh, no.
Now betrays Iturbides. Mm-hmm. They make a couple of different plans, and lo and behold, Don Felipe de la Garza is captain from Tampico, and so he gets him. He's going to bring him to DF. The journey from Veracruz to Mexico City, I often say DF. I think most Mexicans know what I'm talking about. Yes. When I say DF, but for those who don't, DF is Mexico City, District Federal.
Federal District?
Like we say Washington, D.C., they say Mexico DF, District Federal, the Federal District. Very much like, you know, Washington, D.C.
It's
very similar in that sense. So, but anyways, the good friend Felipe double-crosses him, turns him over, and he gets arrested right away. So poor Agustin doesn't have much of a chance to try to
run away,
save Mexico, or run away. Yeah,
either.
And I think it would be good if I ended where we left off yesterday. And then where did we leave off yesterday? Remember the that powerful quote?
His passionist words. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to. We ran out of time, and I just said. Again, I want to, as we look back into history, what I want, especially Mexicans that are listening to me now and those, as we think about this history, I want to polish off some of the villains to some extent. Some of the names are really associated as villains. I don't think it's quite fair to lop Iturbides as such a villain. Some of the heroes I want to expose as maybe not so heroic, and find out somewhere how, or maybe following the dictates of God, letting Catholicism have an influence in society is certainly a good thing for society. Because the secret, I think the dirty little secret of the history of Mexico is that the reformers were constantly attacking and making little rules, or sometimes big rules, that handicapped, crippled the Catholic Church. And
we could learn a lot from that, because that's what you see happening today here.
Exactly, Christine. Mm-hmm. That's we can learn a lot, because if you don't see it going on now, it's maybe more subtle, less understood. But when you look at the history of Mexico, it jumps out at you, and you say, how can it? But Hitler be this, actually, to show that he was a pretty nice guy. he was a cat. Remember, he sat with the viceroy from Spain in the Cathedral of Guadalupe in Mexico City on the Feast of St. Bartholomew, as they declared, and the viceroy from Spain said, it's time for us to leave. You take over. You got my blessing. So he was definitely a Catholic that had a faith in Jesus. When they made him emperor, they tried to pile all sorts of goods on him. They gave him a very high salary, which he rejected. And he turned it over to poor and to the army, because he knew the army always needed funds. And he said, no, I don't need it. Maybe he did have some independent wealth. They also said, we're going to give you a great big estate in, guess where? Texas. They wanted to give Iturbides a big estate. Maybe he should have kept it now. But he said, no, I don't need that. And so he those kind of things in his life show that he wasn't an evil, vicious type person at all by any stretch. As history, I think, today tries to point him out. Why? Because he represented the emperor or a king, a monarchy. And us modern-day thinkers automatically think must have horns growing out of your head if you wear a crown on that head, you know? So, but I think if we're honest and we look at world history with Catholic eyes, I think you have to change that attitude. So here he does get arrested, and it's July 19th, 1824. All right. So he lands on July 14th. Here's 5 days later. He's standing in front of a firing squad.
Wow.
In other words, he didn't have a very long, drawn out trial.
No.
You know. We got you. You step foot on this. We want no part of your emperadors or what have you, you know.
They didn't waste time.
They sure didn't, you know. So here's what he says as he's standing there before the firing squad. In the very moment of death, I commend to you love and peace and the observance of our holy religion. Obviously, that's Catholicism that he's talking about. She alone can lead you to glory. I die for having come to help you, and I die happy because I die in your midst. I die with honor and not as a traitor. I refuse to leave that shame to my children and my posterity. I am not a traitor. No. Observe subordination and give obedience to your rulers. To do what they order is to do the will of God. I do not say this from a spirit of vanity, which is far from me. Bang, bang, bang. You know, and he was standing next to one of his generals, Miramón. You might know that name. There's probably streets and towns. Well, they might have been washed out. I'd love to take a big survey of the different names of towns, streets, public schools, and government buildings. You might not find Miramón, because Miramón was associated with Iturbides. He was a general who fought for Iturbides. And so he was captured too and dragged along. And the Miramón was standing in the middle position. And he, being a Catholic and a Christian, said, no, you take the middle position. Like Jesus between the two thieves, he wanted Iturbides to have the middle position in the firing squad of three men stand. Forgot who the third one is, but some other military person, of most likely. So anyways, the poor, another little tidbit from history that shines some nice light on Iturbide is his wife. His wife was a woman by the name of Doña Ana Huarte. And she, of course, isn't very welcome in Mexico either. And she does something marvelous, something beautiful, which I can't tell you until we take a break. we're gonna come back because it sheds some beautiful light on an otherwise tragic story. I'm Father Tom Coyes, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Hello, you silly elves.
Hello, Santa.
Listen, elves. St. Stanislaus Kostka is having its annual Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair.
This sounds like fun.
And, elves, I'm going to need your help to get ready.
We're happy to help. Santa, when is the Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair?
Well, Elfie, St. Stan's Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair takes place Sunday, November 2nd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Santa, is there going to be food?
You silly elf. Yes.
Yay.
Here, elves, read the menu.
Ooh, mostacholi, that's so nice. Turkey and ham sandwiches.
Hot dogs.
Flautas.
Tamales.
Corn.
And so much more.
Is there going to be a raffle?
Ho, ho, ho. Yes, with prizes from $50 to $1,500. Ho, ho, ho. And the drawing is at 4.
Come join us for an afternoon of fun and games with tabs, sale items, bake sale, and so much more. And Santa will be there, too.
Ho, ho, ho.
St. Stan's Christmas Bazaar Craft and Vendor Fair, Sunday, November 2nd, from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. at 1255 North Noble Street, Chicago, one block north of Division Street. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Ladies, would you like to know what it is that men really want? I am Father Thomas Lawyer with a Theology of the Body moment for the Tabor Life Institute. In complement to woman's body, the body of a man is designed to act upon the environment, to go up against things greater than he is. Men are designed to defend, protect, tear down, build, resist, invent, in short, to accomplish the task. Their greatest desire, therefore, is to be told that they have what it takes, they measure up, and have indeed accomplished the task. Conversely, a man's greatest fear is to be told that he is not adequate, that he is a failure. A man wants to see reflected in the eyes of his woman the essential message of his manhood. Yes, I do believe in you, honey. You are my knight in shining armor. Ladies, when a man hears that message, he will do anything for you. To find out more about the theology of the body, visit taborlife.org. Taborlife.org.
Hey, did you just hear that break there? If you do this, men, your woman will do anything for you. Wow.
Pay attention.
That's true.
You know, there is a beauty. I love that theology of the body theme, too. Mm-hmm. And I got so many of my notes on theology of the body that we'll have to do some shows on that, too. Yes. I love the way Father Loy is doing it, too. But anyways, here my angle right now is a little bit of a history, you know? So that Iturbide is now is executed. The first attempt at an emperor fails, you know, and you could see how Mexico wasn't ready for an emperor. You know, that wasn't the right move. You know, did they have to kill him? You know, that's what you'd say. You know, pack him up and send him back to Europe. You know, why couldn't they have done that? You know.
Yeah.
But that's history. So the thing that I wanted to reference about his wife, later on, she has to escape Mexico. So where does she go to a safe haven? It's the United States. She goes up to New Orleans, and especially because it was safe because it was the United States, and there was this. Attitude about religious freedom that it was very Protestant, but it was also it was somewhat protective of Catholics because they did at least feign an acceptance of all Catholics. And down in New Orleans, of course, is very much French. And he coming back from Europe, back with Napoleon and his French friends, where else would his wife go? But guess what? She's a nurse. There was a Spanish general who had fought against her husband, and she finds him at a hospital in New Orleans.
Interesting.
And she takes care of him. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, like a good Catholic.
Like a good Catholic. It certainly pushes your limits of love, and love your enemy as you love
yourself.
Love yourself, yeah. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Love your enemy. Do good to those who
persecute you.
Yeah. So she that just to me shows she was raised good. she had a good character. So, but leaving that aside, history marches on. And what I think I'd like to do, Nick, we need to set the Wayback Machine again. We're going to jump up ahead. So let's bring Mr. Peabody back in over there. Let's see. Here we go.
Hello there. Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
All right, we're going to stay in July again.
Yay.
We're going to set it to July 27th, 1840.
Ooh.
Okay, 1840. We're going up, we're going ahead a little bit, 10, right. 12, 15 years. The reason I set it for 1840 is because Iturbides' history, he's gone, but...
He's history?
He's part of history. Oh, dear. another little tidbit. An interesting part of history is when the revolution happened, they wanted to get... Remember I said that the head of Padre Morelos stayed on a stick for like 3, 4, 5 months?
Ooh.
And his bones... one of the things that they did when the revolution succeeded and Iturbides came into Mexico City, they wanted to bring the bones of Morelos and Hidalgo and Allende and the major figures of the early part of the revolution. I can't remember what date it was, and I'm not even positive it was with Iturbides. It could have been in the Maximiliano time or even as far as Benito Juarez. But there was a riot that started out because they wanted to take the bones of Cortez and destroy the bones of Cortez going back to the 1500s. And it just seems to be a little strange that the revolutionary spirit was so desirous to wipe out the history. There were no good words for Cortez either, even though he brought a lot of unity together through the unity of making a republic out of the tribes. But some of the people from Spain got word that they were going to go take the bones of Cortez, and they got him and they brought him back. They're now in Italy. The bones of Cortez are in Italy. I believe it's Italy. Anyway, someplace in Europe. So, but we jump ahead to 1840, and we have this interchange between presidents. After Iturbides, let me do this as we get to 1840. After Iturbides comes, one of the generals, Guadalupe Victoria, he becomes the first president, regular president, non-emperor, non-monarch, and Victoria Guadalupe Victoria is the official first president. Unfortunately, he doesn't last very long. He starts in 1829 and only lasts in office for 10 months. He runs into some trouble because people don't like him. And he's executed in front of a firing squad.
Wow.
In the year 1831. After Guadalupe Victoriano, we then find José Bocanegra becomes president. but he only lasts for 5 days.
Whoa.
He was president from December 18th to December 23rd in 1829. There's a lot of presidents who had some short terms, you know. Gosh, he was elected president on December 18th. You would think he could put up the Christmas tree.
Right, I was going to say, right before Christmas.
But he's gone by Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Already. So after him is Pedro Vélez. Now, he lasts a little longer than José Bocanegra because
he's
7.
Okay.
7 days.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, he's elected as president in December 23rd, and you would think he'd be able to do the celebrate New Year's Day.
He didn't make New
Year's
Day.
But he doesn't make New Year's Day because he's kicked out December 30th after 7 days in office. Then we get somebody who lasts a little longer, Anastasio Bustamante. You know, some of these names might be somewhat familiar. Mm-hmm. So we do have to continue this roll of interesting figures. And again, trying to see, what is it saying to us today? What are we supposed to apply? What are we supposed to learn from this? Because our nation is in trouble, we need wisdom. We don't need folly. And I hope you get a little sense that what I'm painting here is a little bit of a folly. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
You've heard us say that Winds of Change is listener-supported. That means you help us stay on the air with your dollars and your prayers. And we are asking for that help now. Please take a moment and go to our website, windsofchangeshow.com. That's windsofchangeshow.com. On the upper right-hand side of the page, there is a link, Support Winds of Change Show. Click on that link and donate securely with any major credit card. With your help, Winds of Change will continue to bring you the truth. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Forming Faithful Families is now offering our 15-episode video series on DVD, filmed in stunning high definition, with a free downloadable Small Faith Discussion Group program guide. We hope that you will consider purchasing, implementing, and promoting this video series at the personal and small group level. Forming Faithful Families is a faithful and trustworthy parish-based and small faith community program for marriage and family life faith formation in service to the new evangelization pertaining to the Catholic faith. Listen to this recommendation. Firmly grounded in the teaching of the Catholic Church, sacred scripture, and the wisdom of the saints, with this series, James and Kathleen offer a thirsty world a refreshing and satisfying drink. It also makes a great gift with eternal benefits for both the giver and the receiver. To order your DVD set today, visit formingfaithfulfamilies.com or call 708-334-1988. That's formingfaithfulfamilies.com or call 708-334-1988.
Welcome, everyone. Going from the year 2014 back to the year 1840, again, to... for those, hopefully you're not just joining us because you might be really lost, but hopefully you
missed out a whole lot.
Yeah, that year was full of jam-packed.
It sure was, each of these years. Where was I, Tony? I was starting, you have to help. Let's see.
I can't remember which of the presidents.
Yeah.
The execution of, I don't
know. The execution of
Bustamante.
And Victoriano, Guadalupe Victoria. We got to... Bustamante, after a couple of real short presidents,
yes.
You know, they it's
Bocanegra. Even the last name, Blackmouth.
Yeah, kind of a famous surname. I know a number of Bocanegras. So, but anyways, after Bustamante steps down, Bustamante gets two friends appointed provincial presidents, José Bocanegra and Pedro Vélez. In 1830, the Mexican Colonization Act, which prohibits further U.S. settlements and prohibits slavery in Texas. You know, so I got to tip my hat to the government, Mexico, and they were pushing anti-slavery. right away. Not right away, but a few years before the United States. And that's why Abraham Lincoln had a soft spot. Even though Abraham Lincoln wasn't Catholic, he saw that Mexico was anti-slavery and Abraham Lincoln was anti-slavery. And so there was an affinity there, and which is a little strange in the sense that Abraham Lincoln is one of the founders of the Republican Party. And today, so many of the Hispanics think of Republicanism as like, oh, they're the enemy.
See how everything's messed up?
And it's like, wait a minute. It started with this defense, you know, this insight into human nature, namely that we shouldn't have slaves. So then we get to Bustamante. Then we get Melchior Muzquiz. He was president for 4 months. After that, we have Manuel Gomez Pedraza, who was one of the generals that was fighting against Iturbides and now is president. If you were a general that led a battalion against the emperor and the emperor falls, then you get to be president. So.
For how long is the key?
Well, not very long. No. He was president for 2 whole months.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And he had to, he got Santa Anna is, remember, Santa Anna is in the background. He's stirring up the pot too. Mm-hmm. He was there at Veracruz when Iturbides came back and he was there. He wanted Iturbides to be president or something. Yeah, he was at least, because he was anti-colonial, Spain. Mm-hmm. Spain. So anyways, this president, Manuel Gomez Pedraza, who was one of these generals, he became president, but Santa Anna denounces him, so he has to resign. Mm-hmm. So we have the first emperor executed, the first president executed, the second president executed, and now we got a couple other resignations already.
Smart before execution.
Yeah.
Survivors.
Really. Then we come to Santa Anna. Santa Anna, March 30th, 1833. He becomes president for the first time. I say for the first time because he was president 12 times.
Wow.
Maybe you didn't know that. But Santa Anna. And Santa Anna, guess how long Santa Anna? He was inaugurated as president March 30th, 1833, guess when he left office? Okay, if you would have said March 31st, you'd be right. Because he was president for only one day.
And left.
He was only president. And he kind of marched into Congress to get himself elected president
<left. laughs>
because he wanted Gomez Farias to be elected. Uh-huh. Now, for the next 20 or so years, there's this musical chairs going on between Santa Anna and Gomez Farias. They were friends, but they weren't very good friends, I guess, because they mm-hmm. kept on pushing each other out of office. And especially when Santa Anna had to go up north and fight mm-hmm. the Americans, somebody had to take care of Washington, and there were these take care of D.C. So what I hope what this hour has done is piqued your interest to look at the political landscape, because it's a sad, interesting one. Mm-hmm. And the way Catholicism was looked at as an enemy, that's what we have to consider ourselves with today. Because it's happening again today, my friends. And don't look at just who promises you what, because that's what that was going on down in Mexico all the time. Look at who's most faithful to our Lord Jesus Christ. We'll see you next time. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You've been listening to listener support of The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is right. It's time.